Okay, so we are on the top of Yud Amud Aleph on 10a, the middle of the first line. So Tanu Rabbanan. Good, everyone got it? Okay, so the middle of the first line, Tanu Rabbanan, Yud Amud Aleph. Tanu Rabbanan, so the rabbi said on the Braisa, Eretz Yisrael Nivreis Techila V'chol Ha'olam Kulo Nivra Levasof. So we're going to have several statements of the Gemara that are going to go through how Eretz Yisrael, how the land of Israel is like the top priority, how it's like the most important, and how it's sort of valued and treated better than all the other lands in the world. So again, let's start again. Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbi said on the Braisa, Eretz Yisrael Nivreis Techila V'chol Ha'olam Kulo Nivra Levasof. So the rabbi said on the Braisa that the land of Israel was created first, and the rest of the world was created after that. That the Pasuk says before he made the land, which we understand to mean Israel, and the outskirts. So first God made Israel, and then he made the rest of the lands. Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, Mashka Osa Kadosh Baruch Hu Be'atmo. So you want to know another thing that's great about the land of Israel? So the land of Israel, it is watered, meaning God allows the rain to come down. He's the one who brings the rain to Israel. He does it by himself. And the rest of the world, they only get rain through a shliach. God sends a messenger to bring rain to them. That he gives rain onto the face of the land, and he sends water onto the face of the outskirts. So the fact that it's that's saying that God gives rain, and then it says he sends, so we understand that when he says, when it says sends, we understand that to mean that he's using a messenger sent to send rain. So God brings rain to the land of Israel, and he sends a messenger to bring rain to the other lands of the world. Okay, Eretz Yisrael shows that Megishamim. Eretz Yisrael shows that Megishamim v'chol ha'olam kulo mitamsis. So the land of Israel, it drinks rainwater, and the rest of the world, it sort of gets the remnant water. So in other words, the land of Israel gets like the prime, like the first real rain, that the actual rainwater that's coming to the land of Israel, and the leftover water, like the remnant water, or whatever is left, that's given to the rest of the world. Shenemar Hanosi Matar Al Panei Eretz, using the same pasuk that God gives rain to the world. So why does it say that God gives rain? Matar is the word we use, rain. And then it says that God sends water to the rest. So God's sending rain to the land of Israel, and he's sending water to the outskirts. So that means like the remnant water. Eretz Yisrael Shoset Techila V'chola Olam Kulo Levasof. So it's a little unclear what this means. We'll understand it based on the black and white understanding of what it probably does mean. So again, Eretz Yisrael shows that tzechila, the land of Israel drinks first, meaning it gets rain there first. The chula olam kulo levasov, and the rest of the world gets rain afterwards. Meaning, so the land of Israel, like the rain falls down there first. That's how we understand that, and the rest of the world, so they get the rains after that. A little unclear exactly what that means literally. So what does that mean? The land of Israel gets rain first. Is that actually true? Is the rain actually falling there first? A little unclear, but that's what it's saying. So the land of Israel gets rain first, and then the rest of the world gets rain afterwards. How do we know? Shenemar hanosin matar al panei Eretz, because of the pasuk, the same pasuk that we've been quoting, because God first brings rain to Israel, and then the pasuk says he brings it to the outskirts. So that's how it goes. And what's a mashal for this? What's a good analogy for this? Mashal la'adam shemegabel esagvina. There's a parable to understand this of a person who is like kneading together cheese. So how does a person knead cheese? What he does is he like grabs together all the solid pieces of cheese from the whey. That's like the liquid that's with the cheese. There's a parable to a person who's kneading together cheese, right? He's taking the solids from this whey, right? Whey. Then no tell us ochel maniach hasapasolas. How does he go about making this cheese? Well, he takes the ochel, he takes the cheese, and he leaves the pasolas. He leaves the remnant. So in other words, with the parable is saying is that the land of Israel gets the rain, and the rest of the countries, the rest of the world, just gets like the remnants. So it's a little bit unclear how this parable is actually related to the statement that we just said. But for right now, let's assume it at face value. Sorry about that. I'm just going to mute you there, Sam. So it's a little unclear exactly what the connection might actually be. But okay, so again, the statement was that the land of Israel gets rain first, and then the rest of the countries get rain afterwards. And then we have a mashal that the person gathers cheese together. How does he knead together cheese? Well, first he takes all of the pieces of cheese, and he leaves the whey on the side, meaning that basically the way you would understand it, at least according to the black and white flow of the Gemara, seemingly, is that the land of Israel gets the the prime rain, and the rest of the world gets the remnant rain, the secondary rain, if you will. Okay, going further, Amar Maramam Tikin Hein Ba'avim. So if you remember a couple of weeks ago when we did the previous daf, so we had the Machlokes Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer were arguing about where does rain come from. So one perspective, I believe Rabbi Yeshua was of the perspective that rain came from the sky, and Rabbi Eliezer was of the perspective that rain came from the ocean. So according to that perspective, we said previously that Mamtikin Hein Ba'avim. He said, how could it be? How could the rain come from the ocean water? That doesn't make any sense, because we know that ocean water is salty, and if ocean water is salty, then how could that be the rainwater? Because if the rainwater would be salty, then all the crops would die. So we said that Mamtikin Hein Ba'avim, that the clouds would basically, or the rain would become sweetened when it went up to the clouds. So that's what we said earlier. Minale, so the Gemara wants to know, how do we know this? From where do we know that the rain gets sweetened by the clouds, meaning that the salt is removed and it becomes like sweet, it becomes good for the crops? So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kesev, that the pasuk says chashechas mayim abesh chakim, that the darkness of the water are the thick clouds of the heavens. Vekesev chashras mayim ave shechakim, that a sieve of water, the thick clouds of the heavens. So what the Gemara is going to do now is assume that these psukim, although they are seemingly in different places entirely, right? One pasuk is in Tehillim and one pasuk is in Shmuel. Nonetheless, what the Gemara does over here is that it says these psukim sound very similar, right? If you look at the words, even though we translated them differently partially, the words are entirely the same except for the first word of each pasuk, where it's chashchas for the first one and chashras for the second one. It's basically just the chaf and the resh that are different in each pasuk. So says the Gemara, we have these two psukim, shakul chaf v'shakul. What you do is you take the chaf, you take the letter chaf, the third letter of the first word in the first pasuk, and you take that and you put it with the resh. You put it with the first word of the second pasuk next to the resh. V'kari be chachsharas or chachashras, right? And the way you would then say it is that it means the preparation. Okay, so what's going on over here? So first of all, it's a little unclear what the word chachsharas means. It seems like like it's hachsharas, meaning the word hechsher, so like a preparation. So basically, the understanding over here is that we have these two psukim that are somehow minutely connected because they sound similar. So we combine them, meaning we take one letter from the other pasuk and put it in another pasuk, right? And we get this one united word that means the preparation. So in other words, what you end up with is that these psukim tell us that the water is basically prepared in the clouds, that the rainwater gets prepared in the clouds. So that's evidently the source that teaches us that the rain somehow is changed or altered when it's in the clouds, and that's evidently the source, therefore, that teaches us that the rainwater gets sweetened in the clouds, because it gets prepared there. The ocean water loses its saltiness in the clouds. It gets sweetened there because it gets prepared there. That's how we know it from these psukim. Rabbi Yeshua, Bahani Krai, my darish behu. So I apologize. So that was the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, who said the opinion that said that the rainwater comes from the ocean, and therefore we wanted to know how it's salty, so we say that it gets sweet in the clouds. So that's Rabbi Eliezer. He's the opinion that says that the rainwater comes from the ocean. Rabbi Yeshua Bahani Krai my Darshbu. So Rabbi Yeshua, who again, if you remember, says that the rainwater comes from the sky, well, so what does he do with these psukim? These psukim seem to say, on some level, in a black and white way, that the rainwater gets prepared in the heavens, seemingly because it came from below. So how would Rabbi Yeshua, who says that the rainwater starts in the heavens, how would he understand these psukim in the first place? So Savar Laki Hadchi Asa Rabdimi Amar Imri Bamar Rava. He holds like that which Rabdimi said, that when he came, he said that they say in the West, Nahor Anane, that if the clouds are light, Zeirin Mohi, that you're going to have like a minute, like a little bit amount of rain. Chashoch, but if the clouds are light. Chashoch Anane, if the clouds are dark, Segiin Mohi, you're going to have an abundant amount of rain. In other words, what the Pesukim just teach you is like a fact of life. You want to know how the world works? Well, very simple. Whenever you have dark clouds, so you know you're going to have a lot of rain. We know that it's true, right? You look in the sky, you see dark clouds. That means they're going to probably have a lot of rain. It's like a storm is a coming. If you have light clouds, okay, maybe you'll have a few droplets, but it's not going to be such a big thing. So in other words, Rabbi Yeshua says, these Pesukim don't teach you anything about how or where rain comes from. They just tell you the fact of life, that dark clouds mean a lot of rain, and light clouds mean a little bit of rain. Keman azla hadetanya. Okay, and it actually goes according, okay, period, new statement. Keman azla hadetanya. Whose opinion, Rabbi Yeshua or Rabbi Eliezer, goes according to the following braisa? Mayim ha'alyonim b'mamar him teluyim u'peruseyan mei geshamim. That the Mayim Halyonim, like the upper waters, are suspended by the word of God, and their fruit is the rain. So that's what the... Sam, I'm just going to mute you.
No, I'm good.
I'm just going to... sorry. So again, Mayim Halyonim, the upper waters are suspended by the word of God, and their fruit is the rain. So that's what the Braisa says. And Amar mipri masecha tisba haaretz, that from the fruit of your handiwork tisba haaretz, the land will become satiated. So it's a little unclear exactly what's going on over here. So if you take a look at Rashi. On the right side, it's basically almost parallel to where we are at. The Dibur HaMaschil is B'ma'amar Heim Tuliyin. So it says the Mishnah, Einan Nachus al Shum Davar, Ela Mekunsos Ve'omdos Kemen Berecha, V'Tuliyus B'ma'amar Shal Kadosh Baruch Hu, that the rain is suspended on God. When God decides the rain comes, that's when it comes. So back to the Gemara. So we have this braisa that says that the upper waters are basically go by the word of God, and that the fruit that comes from this water is the rain. So to explain it in layman's terms, we understand that the basic understanding is that there was water that was sort of stored, and the produce of this water that was stored, well, that is what we call rain. So in other words, there's some water that gets stored up in the heavens, and some rain and some produce of that stored water is what we call rain. So basically what we're saying over here is that there is rain that's in the heavens, and that rain starts in the heavens. So who is the one that says that rain comes from the heavens? Kiman, who is this like? Which opinion is this? Rabbi Yeshua. It's like Rabbi Yeshua. The Rabbi Yeshua is the one who says that the rain originates in the heavens. So the Pasuk and the Braisa that seems to teach that the water is like the produce of the rain that is stored away in the heavens, that is the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua. Just to quickly clarify that one more time, so we know that at the beginning of time that God took some water and he stored it away in the heavens there. He just stored it there and it will be revealed sometime in the future. So this teaching is basically saying that rain is like, if you think of like the stored water, that's like the endowment. You never touch the endowment, you only have the produce of the endowment. So the stored waters from the beginning of time are there, and we reap the benefits from whatever interest comes from the endowment. That's what we call rainwater. So that's like Rabbi Yeshua, because Rabbi Yeshua is the one that says that the rainwater always originates from the heavens. It doesn't start anywhere else. Rabbi Eliezer, but what about Rabbi Eliezer, who again, Rabbi Eliezer says that rainwater does not come from the heavens. He says that they start from the ground. There's a process of evaporation, and then the rain falls. What does he do with this braisa and this teaching? He says, what are you talking about? Very simple. When we say the words in the pasuk, mipri ma'asecha, that the fruit of your handiwork, which we understood according to this braisa, means the fruit of the rain, the fruit of the water's handiwork, the fruit of the stored water's handiwork. So Rabbi Eliezer just says that we're not talking about the fruit of that stored water's handiwork. We're saying the fruit of Hashem's handiwork, meaning the rain that falls comes as a result of God providing the rain. And so, in other words, where is God providing the rain from? Very simple. God made the oceans. If God made the oceans, the rain actually comes from there in the first place. So Rabbi Eliezer says, very simple, this pasuk actually sounds a lot more like me than it, and this pasuk and the teaching sounds a lot more like me than it does you, Rabbi Yeshua. I'm Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Kol ha'olam kulo mitamtzes Gan Eden hu shoseh. So we're going to have a few fascinating teachings now related to Gan Eden that are going to come up, the Garden of Eden. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, the whole world drinks from the remnant waters of Gan Eden. Shenamar v'nahar yotzei me'Eden. We know that there's a water that comes out of Eden. That's what the pasuk says. And so we understand this to mean that. So first, Gan Eden gets some rainwater, and then we get whatever's left over. The rest of the water that's left over after Gan Eden gets water. That's what we get for the rest of the world. Tana, this was taught mitamtzes beis kor shoset tirkav, that the remnants of the base core can water a tirkav. So the what this means is, just to put in again in layman's terms, a base core basically is an area of land in which you can plant a certain amount of crops. For our purposes, we're just going to do easy math. So the base core is an area where you can plant 180 kav, and a tirkav is where you can plant 3 kav. So a base core basically, it turns out, is 60 times the size of a tirkav. And so basically what this is teaching us over here is that the Gan Eden is 60 times larger than the rest of the world. So the remnant waters that are for the larger piece, which is Gan Eden, they are the ones that water the tirkav, this 3 kav space, which is the rest of the world. Okay, a little complicated, but okay, let's keep going back there. So we're at the two dots in the middle of the page. Tano Rabbanan, the rabbis taught on a brisa. Eretz Mitzrayim, Chavya Dalad Meos Parsa, Al Dalad Meos Parsa. You want to know how big Egypt is? Well, here you go. Here is the actual measurement. The land of Egypt is 400 parsings, I guess, by 400 parsings. V'hu Echad Mishishim B'Kush. And you want to know how big the land of Kush is, which we assume maybe Ethiopia? So if you want to know how big Kush is, Kush is 60 times the size of Egypt. V'Kush Echad Mishishim Ba'olam. And you want to know how big the world is? Well, the world is 60 times the size of the land of Ethiopia, or the land of Kush. V'olam echad mishishim began. And when it comes to the garden, meaning the Garden of Eden, so that Garden of Eden is 60 times the size of the rest of the world. That's the teaching that we just had previously, that the Garden of Eden is 60 times the size of the rest of the world. V'gan echad mishishim le'Eden. So this is a little complicated, because those of us who have a very little understanding of what the Garden of Eden actually is, which is most of us, so we always thought there was something called the Garden of Eden. We never thought there was anything else. Turns out, no, there's the Garden of Eden, and there's actually Eden proper. So, says the Mishnah, so we just said that the Garden of Eden is 60 times the size of the world. The Gan Echad Mishishim LeEden, and Eden itself is 60 times the size of the garden. The Eden Echad Misamech LeGehenim. You want to know how big Gehenim is? Well, Gehenim is 60 times the size of Eden, so it's pretty big. Nimtza Kol Olam Kulo Kikisoy Kedera LeGehenim. So if you want to basically do a quick comparison here, if you want to know how big the entire world is in comparison to Gehenim, well, the entire world is like a pot covering for Gehenim. You know how you have like a whole big pot, and the pot is pretty big, and the covering, okay, the cover is like a little piece, whatever it is, just to cover the pot. So that's how big Gehenim is in comparison to the world. The world is the pot cover, and Gehenim is the pot itself. Others say Gehenim ain't lashior. There is no measurements for how big Gehenim is. We don't know, or it's not comprehensible. It seems like we don't know what the measurement is. That Eden doesn't have a shiur. Seems like it doesn't mean that it's like an eternal space, rather, according to the black and white understanding. But again, so Gehenim doesn't have a shiur. We just don't know what it is. And Eden doesn't have a shiur. We just don't know what the shiur, how big the place is. Amar Rabbi Oshia. Rabbi Oshia says, "My dichtiv shochenes al mayim rabim." Rabas Otsaros. What does the Pasuk mean when it says you, and referring to Babylonia, you Babylon, who dwell by great waters, abundant in storehouses? So this is what the Pasuk means. Mi garam lebavel sheyihu otsaros seha mileos bar. Who is the one, or what is it that causes the land of Babel? What is it that causes the land of Babel to have these storehouses that are filled with grain? How is it that Babel has so much food there? Heve Omer, how is it that they have so much produce there? Heve Omer, you have to say that it's because it dwells next to lots of water. And so, what does this mean exactly? So Amar Rav says Asira Babel, that Babel is very wealthy. Dechatzta below Mitch. That it's like reaping, that it's always having produce below Mitra, but it doesn't have rain there. Amar Rabbi Nikitinan. So Rabbi says we have a tradition. Tovani velo yoshani. The Bavel is like a swampy place, and it never dries out. So basically, what this is all saying over here is that why? So going back a line or two, why is it that Bavel is always filled with grain? Because it's next to water. Meaning, what does it mean that it's next to water? The basic understanding is that it's Bavel is a very low land, and since Bavel is a very low land, so all of the water that's in the rest of the region just flows down from the high mountains. It goes down to Bavel. So when we say that it's next to water, it means that it's just in prime location because all the water comes to it, and that's what we said over here. Because Bavel is very wealthy, it always has produce, doesn't need rain, because rains in other places, and all that rain just trickles down to Bavel itself, and that's what we say also, that it's a swampy place, and it never dries out. Okay, we are up to the Mishnah, and now this is looks like the more proper middle of the page. New Mishnah, been a while. On the third of Mar Cheshvan, that's when we ask for rain, that's when we start saying, V'sein talamater levracha. Rabban Gamliel Omer, Rabban Gamliel says, B'shivabo, that Rabban Gamliel says that on the seventh of the month of Mar Cheshvan, that's when we start asking for rain, that's when we start saying V'sein talamater levracha. Tetvav yom achar achag. How do you get to the seventh of Mar Cheshvan? So this is an idea that we've seen already. It's because it's 15 days after the holiday is over, after Shmini Atzeres is over, that's when we start saying V'sein talamater levracha. That's when we start asking for rain, and that turns out 15 days. If you do the math, 15 days after the holiday is over, that's the 7th of Mar Cheshvan. Why? Where do you get this calculation, 15 days? It seems sort of arbitrary, says the Mishnah. No. Kidei she'yagia achron sheb'Yisrael l'naharpras. Because we want to wait until the last person, who everyone we know was Ola the Regel, everyone went down to Yerushalayim for the holiday. And so we want to wait until the last person is able to get back up north towards the Euphrates River. And so that, we assume, will take 15 days. Again, we're not waiting for like the slowest person, it seems, but the average person won't take more than 15 days to get back from Yerushalayim to the Euphrates River. So therefore, we say we wait 15 days, and that's when we start asking for rain. We don't want to ask for rain before that, because that's ridiculous. We're not going to ask for rain and have our poor brothers and sisters in Israel who are still traveling get drenched. And we assume that when we ask for rain, we hope that God's going to actually grant our request very quickly. So we assume, therefore, that we start asking for rain only when we're ready to receive it. And again, we're not ready to receive it until our last brother or sister returns back to the north, which is, again, is approximately 15 days. So that's why we say we start on the 7th according to Rabban Gamliel. That's when we start saying the same Talmudar Levrach. Okay, the Gemara says as follows, Amr B'Elazar, Halacha K'Rabban Gamliel. The Halacha follows the Rabban Gamliel, that we start saying the same Talmudar Levrach on the 7th of Mar Cheshvan. Tanya Chananya Omer. We have a brayso that Chananya says Uvagola ad shishim b'tekufa. So it's a little complicated over here. God willing, in the future, we'll give a shir on this proper understanding what this means. So, but the black and white text means that Uvagola in the exile, meaning outside of Israel, ad shishim b'tekufa, until 60 days in the fall season, meaning 60 days after the autumnal equinox. That's when we actually begin saying V'sein talamater levracha. So we say it in Israel earlier, and we wait 60 days after the autumnal equinox to start saying V'sein talamater levracha in every other country outside of Israel. Amar Rav Huna Barchia Amar Shmuel. Halacha Kichananya. We say the halacha follows Chananya. That's true. We start saying V'sein talamater levracha in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, 60 days after this time period. Eini, is this so? V'ha'abo minei mishmuel. But they asked of Shmuel. Me'emas Mitzkarinan B'sein Tal Umatar. He said that they asked him explicitly, when do we start saying B'sein Tal Umatar? Amar Lehu Michi Me'ailei Tzivi Levei Tavos Rishba. So he has a very fascinating line over here. It says that when do you start saying B'sein Tal Umatar L'bracha? From the time that they bring wood into the shed of Tavos. Who is Tavos? The bird hunter. So whenever they start bringing the wood into the shed of Tavos, this bird hunter, that's when you start saying B'sein Tal Umatar L'bracha. And everyone wants to know, what in the world is that? So says the Gemara, Dilma, so but the general assumption is that's actually before the 60-day period. So says the Gemara, maybe Dilma Idi Chad Shiurahu, maybe they're actually both the same time period. So maybe when we say 60 days after the autumnal equinox, and this time period of when you bring the wood into the shed, maybe that's actually saying they both agree that they both say that you start saying the same Talmud of the Bracha these 60 days afterwards. Ibayilu, but they asked, okay, fine. So that's the answer the Gemara is giving. In other words, the question on the Gemara was maybe this isn't the case. That's 60 days because maybe we follow this shear of when they start bringing the wood into the shed. Or the Gemara concludes, no, it must be that they're actually the same shear. Okay. Ibayilu, Yom Shishim, Kilifnei Shishim, O Kilachar Shishim. Okay, so they ask the following question. We know that before 60 days in Chutz La'aretz, we don't ask for it. We know after 60 days in Chutz La'aretz, after this autumnal equinox, that we do ask for rain. But what about day 60 itself, right? Do we assume day 60 is like the before 60, or do we assume that it's like the after 60? Says the Gemara, Tashma, come in here, Rav Amar, Yom Shishim, Kala Acher Shishim. One opinion says, Rav says that the 60th day is like the after 60 days, meaning therefore that on day 60, we start asking for rain like we do from day 61 and on. Shmuel Amar, Yom Shishim Klifnei Shishim. Now Shmuel says that day 60 is like the before, the earlier days, which means since before day 60, we don't ask for rain. So too Shmuel saying that on day 60 itself, we don't ask for rain. We start asking for rain. We start saying the same Talmud for the Bracha on day 61. Amar Rav Nachman Reitzchak, Rav Nachman Reitzchak says, you want to know how to remember this Machlokus Rav and Shmuel? The Simanach. What is this? Okay, I'm getting a notification that we're running out of time. So what I recommend is, let's just do this very quickly. So everyone exit out, and then just click on the link one more time, okay? So we'll do that really quickly right now. I'm going to exit out. Okay, good. We got Howie. Let's wait another second. Okay, good. Stands back. Okay, good. Sam is back. Okay, and hopefully Marilyn will come back soon as well. Okay, so let's keep going. Try to turn your videos on if you can. Always love to see you guys. Okay, so let's keep going. So again, so we had this machlokas between Shmuel and Rav. Rav says that the 60th day is like the after 60 days, which means on day 60 we start saying the same Talmud of Bracha. And Shmuel says no, that day 60 is like the previous 60 days, which means on day 60 we do not start saying the same Talmud of Bracha. So says Rav Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, the Simanach Ilai Ba'umaya titatai lo ba'umaya. In other words, he says that you want to know how to remember this machlokas. Very simple. The high landers, they require water, and the low landers do not require water. What does that mean? In other words, it has to do with based on where they are from. That those who are from the highlands, well, they always need rain because they lose their rain very quickly. It rains and then it all trickles down. The people who are from the lowlands, they never need rain, right? Bavel never needed rain because they were very low and the rain always came down even if it didn't rain there. So in other words, the opinion that says you start asking for rain earlier, it must be that he's from the highlands because he always needs rain. And the opinion that says you start asking for rain later on, in other words, you only start asking for rain on day 61 and not on 60, means you don't need rain as much. Therefore, it means that you're probably from the lowlands. You're probably from Bavel, because you never need rain. Okay. Amar Rav Papa, Hilchasa Yom Shishim Kel Achar Shishim. What do we paskin, says Rav Papa? We start asking, we assume that day 60 is like the after 60 days, which means that we assume that we do start saying, V'stein Tal Mazar Lebracha on day 60 itself, not on day 61, but rather on day 60 itself. Okay. Another new Mishnah. That was a quick Amar. Another new Mishnah. Higia Yud Zayin, Bemar Cheshvan, Velo Yardu Geshamim. Let's say the 17th of Mar Cheshvan, has arrived, and what do you know, rain has not fallen yet, so that's pretty late. The rainy season should have already started. So if the 17th of Mar Cheshvan comes, and you don't have any rain, so what does that mean? Hitzchilu hayachidim mitanim gimel tanio. So since you don't have any rain yet, when it should have rained, the yachidim, the special pious ones, they should start fasting. How do they fast? They should start fasting a series of three fasts. What are these series of three fasts? What do they look like? Well, the Gemara is going to explain that it's the fasts are a Monday, a Thursday, and a Monday. That's what we call Bahab. That's what they fast. And on Yom Sheni, Yom Chamishi, and Yom Sheni again. Ochlin v'shosin mishachashecha. How do these fasts work? Well, they only have to fast during the day. So once it gets dark the night before, they can eat and drink. It's totally permissible because they only have to start fasting once the daytime actually begins. And they could do work during the fast. They could wash themselves. They could anoint themselves with oil. They could put on shoes, leather shoes, and they can have marital relations. All these things will be permissible during the fast. Let's say Rosh Chodesh Kislev comes, which means, so not only are we have, if you remember, we have like these different demarcation points of when we get more and more nervous. So by the 17th day of Mar Cheshvan, we don't have rain, so we have one level of fast. If Rosh Chodesh Kislev comes, so now we get really concerned, because now if rain still has not come, now we're getting very nervous. Below Yadru Geshamim, rain still has not come. Bezdin Gozrin Shalosh Chanios Alat Sibur. Not only do the Yechidim, not only do the pious ones fast, but even the whole tzibur, the whole congregation starts fasting three fasts again, the Monday, Thursday, Monday fast. Ochlin Meshosin Mesha Chashecha. And again, these people, everyone, can eat and drink at night. And all these things that we said previously that were permitted for the Yechidim in their fast, so too over here. They're allowed to do work, they're allowed to wash themselves, they can anoint themselves with oil, they can put leather shoes on, and they can have marital relations all on this fast as well. Okay, says the Gemara, so if the one thing that was most complicated about the Mishnah that we just said, it was we just had these people, that a definition of a word that we grazed right over, and that is the Yechidim. What in the world is Yechidim? Who are these people? If you want to say the rabbis, say the rabbis. If you want to say another select subgroup, so say that. Why Yechidim? Man Yechidim. Who are the Yechidim? Amar Ravuna, Ravuna says, Rabbanon, it's the rabbis. Meaning, okay, it's a weird word maybe, but you know what it means. It means the rabbis, the holy pious people of the community, those the ones who should be fasting. We have a teaching. Rav Huna says, just like our Mishnah, that the Yechidim fast three fasts. Sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. They fast Monday, Thursday, Monday. My Kamash Milan, what does his teaching add? We know that already. Tanina, we taught in Gozrin Tanis Alat Sibar B'tchila b'chamishi Shtol Havkia Esash Esash Arim. We taught that we never decree a fast for the whole Sibor, having it start on a Thursday. You always have to have it start on a Monday. Why is that? Because if you decree the fast on a Thursday, well, what's going to happen? No one's really going to know what's going on. Maybe the word of the decree has not fully come out yet, and the merchants are going to see everyone's buying all this food on Thursday. Why? Because they have to have a big breakfast meal. Everyone's starving, so they're going to have that big breakfast meal. And what do you know? They're going to be panic buying, right? Something familiar. It's Inyan HaDiyoma. That's how you know that we're on the right daf, because it sounds so familiar to where we're at right now. So everyone's panic buying, because everyone's buying food for their meal tonight, and everyone's buying their food for their meals on Shabbos. So the merchants are going to see that everyone's buying so much food, and they're not going to know that the reason why they're buying is because of the fast, and they're going to start rising prices because they're going to assume the only reason why people are panic buying is because there's a famine. So if you allow the fast to start on a Thursday, the merchants may not hear about why everyone's buying so much food, and therefore they're going to raise prices. We don't want that to happen. So the teaching is that we always start fasts on a Monday. Okay, and so again, so the original question was, though, why does Rav Huna say his statement that the Yechidim only fast on a Monday, Thursday? We know that already from the Mishnah. So says the Gemara, El Shalosh Chanios Harishonos Sheni V'Chamishi V'Sheni. These first three fasts of Monday, Thursday, Monday, Ma'od Tema Hani Milid Sibor Aval Yachidlo. You would assume that the congregation, that only the congregation, only the Tzibor, cannot start their fasts on a Thursday. But maybe the Yechidim, maybe the pious ones, they could start their fasts on a Thursday. Why? Because if you have five rabbis in the community that go start buying a lot of food on a Thursday, no one's going to notice anything. So you assume maybe, so they should be allowed to start their fast on a Thursday. So, you know, if they want. In other words, let's say Mar Cheshvan, the 17th of Mar Cheshvan lands on the 17th, sorry, the 17th of Mar Cheshvan lands on a Wednesday, so start at that Thursday if you want, the day after. So says the Gemara, no. Even though no one will notice if these Yechidim who are fasting, their three fasts, even though people won't actually notice that they're buying a lot of food on Thursday and then no one's going to raise prices because of that, or Rav Huna's teaching is telling us, is Kamash Malan, that his teaching shows us that even these people can only start their fasts on Monday. They don't start their first fasts on Thursday. Okay. Tani Namihachi, we have another braisa that says exactly this, like this. Kesheyeschilu hayechidim lesanos, when these pious ones would begin to fast, mesan and sheni v'chamishi v'sheni, they would fast Monday, Thursday, Monday. That's how it always would be. Umafsik and Beroshe Chadashim. Okay, and further teachings, they would stop their strings of fast. So let's say if a Rosh Chodesh would come in the middle of their fasts, so they would stop their string of fasts. We'll see as the Mishnayos go on that there are actually additional series of fasts that will come on the congregation based on how much how little rain rather there is. So again, so they stop the string of fasts for Mafsik. If Rosh Chodesh is in the middle of the string of fast, they stop the fasting. Okay, you got them at bees now. We have Tovim Haksuvin with Megillah Satanis, and they also stop their string of fast, not just for Rosh Chodesh, but for these special holidays. There used to be something called Megillas Tanis that had a lot of different holidays and fasts and things like that included. So if there are holidays that were written in the Megillas Tanis, then they would stop for that specific holiday as well. So again, if their fast landed during one of the holidays that were written in this Megillas Tanis, they would stop their string of fasts. They would suspend it or stop it for the time being. Okay. Tana Rabbana, and the Rabbi son of Raisa, Al Yomar Adam Tamid Ani. So the Sprice is now dealing with these Yechidim. So anyone who's ever met a truly great rabbi knows that all truly great rabbis are very humble people. So says the rabbis, say the rabbis in the Braisa, no great rabbi should, you know, start saying that they're like a nothing. In other words, every great rabbi, part of their greatness means that not only should they be humble, but they should also have a recognition of who they are. I mean, you could still be humble, but also know that you're great, right? There's so many stories of Gedolim even though they are the most humble people in the world, still there were stories that showed that they did recognize their greatness, not out of a sense of gaiva, but simply out of a sense of everyone has to know where they are actually at in the world. It's inappropriate for someone to demean themselves if that's not actually who they are. So say the rabbis in the Braisa, Al Yomar Adam Tamid Ani. If you have a special person, if you have one of these Yechidim, one of these great rabbis, they shouldn't say Tamid Ani, that I'm just a student and therefore I'm not worthy of being in the category of these pious people that need to fail. A person should say that I'm a student. Any ra'o elios yachid, and I'm not fitting to be one of these pious people. Ella kol tamid chachanim yichidim. Right. So. Therefore, the rabbis widen the definition. Anyone who's a Talmud Chacham, that person is a Yachid. So what does it mean, Talmud Chacham? So we usually define Talmud Chacham as like a great Torah sage. It seems like over here that Talmud Chacham means literally all of the students of the Chachamim they are considered Yechidim as well. Ezehu Yachid ve'ezehu Tamid. Fine, so both of these people have to fast, I guess. So what's the difference between them? How do you define a Yachid? Ezehu Yachid ve'ezehu Tamid. How do you define a student? Yachid kol shara'i limnoso parnes al tzibor. So a Yachid is someone who is fit to be appointed the leader of the community, meaning he's going to be the one giving the halachic decisions. So that's what we call Yachid. Tamid, what's a Tamid? Kol sheshoel in oso davar halacha b'limudo ve'omer. A Talmud is anyone who you can ask him like a davar halacha in what he's currently learning, and he can answer him. So it seems like the Yachid, a great rabbi, could answer a question on anything at any time. A Talmud is someone who could answer a question on what he's learning right now. So it shows you that, you know, some people that's a madrig in and of itself. If you could actually remember what you're learning and give a halacha explanation for something based on your learning, that itself is a great madriga. Okay, there are other people there are other people in the world who learn a lot, and it's great they learn. They should continue learning, but unfortunately, they can't give a halachic decision based on what they're learning. But that's what a talmid is: someone who asks. If he's asked a davar halacha in his learning, he could be able to answer it. And says the Gemara, "Vafilu b'maseches tekala." Let's say someone is learning a super easy masech, like maseches kala or something. So even that, which it doesn't take such a big genius to really be able holding in that. So even someone's learning that, and he can answer a davar halacha in that. Even that person is considered a talmid. But anyway, so it seems like all of these people, the yechidim and the talmidim, it would seem that they all fast. Tana Rabban, the rabbis taught on a brace. Lo kol ha-rotze la'asos atzmo yachid osa tamid oso. So, say the rabbis that we just said that the yechidim shouldn't be humble. Well, we have the exact opposite teaching now. Not anyone who wants to be a yachid can just be a yachid. You can't just wake up one morning and say, oh yeah, I'm a holy rabbi. You can't do that. And someone can't just wake up and say that I want to be a Talmud. I'm a holy Talmud. So, divrei Rabbi Meir, that's what Rabbi Meir says. So what are the differences in the definitions for these purposes? It seems like someone who is a yachid, according to this brisa, is someone who is a yachid and therefore would need to fast for some of these fancy fasts. And a Talmud is someone who wears like distinct clothing, right? Special clothing. If you want to be a true Talmid Chacham, well, you have to be able to dress the part. So again, so someone who wants to make themselves into a Yachid is someone who would then be categorizing himself as someone who needs to fast at special times, and someone who's categorizing himself as a student is someone who is going to dress in a certain way. So a person can't just get up and decide that they are that one day. They have to actually be that. That's what Rabbi Meir says. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Use v'zachor l'tov l'fi she'in sheva hulo eletzar hulo. So when we said that previously, so we basically said that someone can't just decide to fast with the Yechidim if they may not be, and someone can decide to be a Talmud randomly and wear the Talmidim's clothing. So Rabbi Yossi says that no, he disagrees on the first part, that if a person does decide that he's a Yachid and decides to fast with him, he can do this and it'll be remembered for good. It'll be a good thing that he fasts. Why? Because it's not like a praiseworthy thing. No one wants to fast. So if this person is already deciding to fast when the Yechidim are fasting, that I guess seemingly shows there's a shtickle godless to this person. There's something great about him already. And therefore, Eletzar Hulo, because fasting is painful, so he assumes so it'll be good for him to fast. Maybe he may not be a yachid, but he's saying gets up, says that he's a yachid, and he wants to fast, so we let him do that. We do allow such a thing. Tani idach, another brisa. Lo kol ha-rotze la'asos atzmo yachid osa tamid osa. A person gets up can't just say they're a yachid one day, and a person can't just get up and say they're a tamid one day. A person can't just get up one day and say they're a yachid and therefore fast, and a person can't just get up one day and say that they're a tamid and wear these special tamid clothing. Divrei Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. That's what Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, b'me devar amurim. When do we say such a thing that you can't wake up one day and decide you're one of these things? B'davar shel shevach, aval b'davar shel tsar osa v'zochor. Right? So we only say that a person can get up and do these things, the praiseworthy things. We only say that a person can't do them if they are praiseworthy. Right? So in other words, a person can't get up and say that they're a Talmud and then start getting to wear the special Talmud clothing. That would be ridiculous. But if he wants to do something that will cause him pain, then that will be he could do that, and he'll be remembered for good for that as well. Because again, fasting, for example, if a person wants to get up them and say that they're yachad, and that would implicate them in being one of the people that has to fast. So that, we assume, a person is allowed to do. Again, maybe he's not a yachad, maybe he is a yachad, probably not a yachad, but we allow him to say that he is a yachad for these purposes, because at the end of the day, he's not clearly doing it with good intent in mind, because he's going to be in pain as a result of it, and so we say that's allowed. But again, a person can't do something he'll get praised for it, or he'll look good for it, because that's clearly has the wrong intentions at heart. Tana Rabbanan, another brisa, Misha haya misana al hatsara v'avra. Let's say someone was fasting over something terrible that's happened. Let's say there wasn't rain, so he was fasting. And what do you know? As he's fasting, it's amazing. He's a miracle worker, fasting for 10 minutes, and then all of a sudden, the terrible thing that happened it goes away. There's actually just a relevance for where we're at right now in the world. There has been a decree of the OU and other great Rabbanim have declared tomorrow to be a half fast day because of everything going on. So they say fast until Chatzos. So let's say, God willing, our fast should be so powerful and our tefillah should be so heard by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that as of tomorrow morning we'll be fasting for an hour and coronavirus will be totally eliminated from the world. So that's what the case over here. Let's say someone fasts and all of a sudden the ailment goes away before they're done fasting. Ala chula, let's say someone's fasting over a sick person in Esrape and immediately they start fasting and the person is healed. You're really a miracle worker. Nonetheless, even if the fast has had the desired outcome before you're even done fasting, still, you still continue fasting, mashlim, you still finish the fast. So, you know, you look a little foolish, you know, you're still fasting, and the guy is totally healed, but okay, that's the halacha. We have the person finish the fast. Haholich. Mimakom she'in mes'anin, lamakom she'mes'anin, harei ze mes'ana imahin. A person walks from a place where they are not fasting to a place that they are fasting. So harizem is ana iman. He should start fasting with them. So in other words, you're in one city, they're not fasting. You go to another city, they are fasting. You should go start fasting with them. If you go to from a place that they are fasting to a place that they're not fasting, still, he should still complete his fast. So again, no matter which way you spin it, you're going to have to fast in either one of these situations. Shachach v'achal v'shasa. Let's say in case one, right? So case one was when he goes to a place that they are fasting, but he wasn't from a place that they were fasting. So shachach le'achal v'shasa, he forgot when he got there. He didn't realize he forgot that they were fasting. So he eats and he drinks. Says the Gemara, al yisra'a b'fnei hatzibur. He should not appear before the congregation. He shouldn't like go out. This guy's chewing on cookies or whatever. He shouldn't go out with his little Chips Ahoy bag and start eating in front of everyone. He shouldn't appear that he's eating in front of everyone. V'al yanhig idunin v'atzmon. Sometimes people do this. You know, you ever have that, you know, like you're one of the minor fasts, you wake up in the morning, you forget, you take a cup of water, you take a drink, and some people say, oh, okay, I broke the fast, now I'm going to go have my big steak dinner. That's not how it works. Says the Gemara, if this person broke their fast, you shouldn't indulge yourself. You should take it easy, you know. Okay, you can eat, I guess, but don't indulge yourself. How do you know this? Shenemar, v'yomer Yaakov levanav, lama tisra'u. The Yaakov Avinu said to his children, Yaakov said to his sons, why do you make yourselves conspicuous? Amar lehem Yaakov levanav, Yaakov was saying to his sons, al tiru atzmechem kisha'atem savin. Don't make it noticeable that you guys have plenty of food. Lo b'fnei Esav, you shouldn't make it clear before the children of Esav. Lo b'fnei Yishmael, you shouldn't make it clear before the children of Yishmael. Don't let anyone know that you have food. And it seems like this teaching over here is specifically when Yaakov told his sons to go down and to Egypt and to get some produce. Seems like they didn't need produce because they had food. But Yaakov said, go down, get some food. You know why? Because we don't want any of the other nations, the tribes, the nation of Esau or the nation of Yishmael, we don't want them to see that we truly are satiated. Why? Kadesha lo yiskanu bachem. Because we don't want them to actually be jealous of you, and as a result, we say you shouldn't make it look like you are satiated. Okay, so we're going to stop right here because we've gone longer than we have in the past. So we'll stop right here, God willing, next week at this same time. We'll continue from here and through the rest of Daf Yad Aleph. But for now, Yashar Koch to all, and have a great night, everyone.